This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with the New World Report. Professor Evan Ellis of the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute reporting from Lima, Peru. He's on the road for business. We go, however, to headlines that tell a story that needs filling in. Brazil's Bolsonaro discharged from hospital. Tests show early type of skin cancer. This is the result, I believe, of keen attention for his health. There's been disruption of the former president's health for some time, stemming from, I'm told, the attack on him in the first campaign for president. He was stabbed in the abdomen, and things have never settled down for him since. He does not look to be a vigorous man, but at the same time, he's been condemned now to, I believe, 27 years in detention for leading an assassination plot at the last election against Lula da Silva. I stop there, Professor, because I don't know where this is going. Half the country voted fervently for Bolsonaro. They're not at peace with this condemnation in the courts. There was one member of the court who voted not guilty. The rest, I think, was a five-man court, overwhelmingly condemned him and sentenced him to jail. So he's not just not going to run for presidency again. He's going to spend the balance of the remainder of his life in detention. Is this gesture? Is this theater? Is this to be enforced? How do you measure the future now, condemning a man who was president and who could easily be president again if they take the boot off his neck?
Well, as you point out, John, the action by the portion of the Supreme Court, five justices, of which all of those justices were appointed by Lula da Silva. Bolsonaro had two justices that he had appointed on the court who didn't get to be part of that. But the perception by, at least according to polls, approximately 40% of Brazilians, that this is unjust and essentially lawfare to take their preferred leader off the board, has been very divisive in Brazilian society. The question now becomes that, with his being sent 27 years in jail, along with seven co-defendants for a range of different things that he was supposedly found guilty of, including not only trying to continue in office, but even it involves part of supposedly trying to kill President Lula. But the question now becomes with Bolsonaro not only already politically inhabilitated through 2030, but now in jail, although it'll probably be just a house arrest sentence, but whether his son Flavio takes the mantle, whether his wife Michelle does, one of his political allies, Sao Paulo Governor Tarcísio de Freitas, had a very pro-Bolsonaro rhetoric and seems to be trying to take the mantle, but it likely will not only continue to polarize Brazilian society, but in many ways it will supercharge the right at a time when the left Lula supporters are a bit more muted about that. But it continues to play a factor in not only how Brazilians see Bolsonaro, but how Brazilians see where Lula and his government, who also is taking an increasingly series of anti-U.S. positions, embracing BRICS, has embraced Russia, has previously received the Iranians, including a warship not more than about 2 years ago, etc. That question of where Lula and his workers' parties are taking the country.
The puzzle about Brazil right now is the next step. What is to be done? What you just outlined was guaranteed turmoil in the next election, which is in 26, guaranteed. And there's time for Brazilian to anticipate that and cut it off. Or are they just going to ride this out? What is your sense? Because protest is going to be the least of the trouble if this stays as it is right now.
No, absolutely. One of the things that has to be resolved now, and I think it's going to depend in part on Bolsonaro, the degree to which he is willing to put his support behind one of possible successors, or whether that stays unresolved and the successors continue to work out among themselves. But also part of it is really what comes next in Brazil in terms of economic policy, in terms of where Lula takes the country, and where the Brazilian judicial system focuses on other aspects of issues such as free speech and limitations on speech, which has been another object of a focus, censoring speech that is seen as basically hate speech. That was something that, of course, became an issue for Elon Musk in his previous relationship in Brazil. And so I think some of those decisions among Bolsonaro and his supporters, plus to what degree legislatively Brazil takes some of these issues in addressing things of deep concern to the right, that's going to shape how the electoral politics plays out as Brazil approaches the 2026 elections.
And one more detail about Brazil. President Trump directed remarks from the trade negotiations to say, if this to do with jailing Bolsonaro, then that. Is that a story that's going to get worse? Because as I recall, it had to do with tariffs that are confiscatory it's in some eyes.
I think it will, John. Trump had made a number of statements, calling not only that Bolsonaro is a good man and it's a terrible thing what happened, but clearly the prospect of the continuation of the 50% tariffs and talk about doubling down even more on some of those punitive actions. Because Brazil has far more options than, for example, Mexico has to turn away from the United States and to work more closely with the People's Republic of China on its exports, we're already seeing, I think, an increase in that cooperation. Brazil reaching out actually to cooperate with India, which has also been sanctioned by the Trump administration, working more aggressively with China in terms of both the exports and trying to attract Chinese investments. We're seeing Brazil looking to collaborate with the acceleration of a alternative to the use of the U.S. dollar in international financial transactions. We've already seen, again, a willingness to work with Sergei Lavrov and Vladimir Putin with respect to Russia. So although Brazil is not casting itself as a anti-U.S. actor explicitly, clearly it's embracing a path which is accelerated by these punitive actions by the U.S., which will likely push it more and more into the hands of cooperation, not just with China and Russia and Iran, but Brazil is emerging as one of the axis of this new pushback in Latin America against the U.S.
You tell me there is a tri-border region. Brazil, Colombia, and Peru all come together. I've never discovered it before, so thank you for that. But that takes us from Brazil to Colombia, where there's constant question about the credibility of Gustavo Petro. In fact, Evan and I were surprised to see in a report about the troubles in the Americas that the Financial Times, which we know is extremely conservative about making let's put it this way, unkind remarks and rumor based about the conduct of chief executives, went out of its way to say that Petro is said to have a problem with perhaps drugs, because he's declared cocaine no different than, I think, something like coffee, something trite. In any event, Petro's personality, that's in focus here, but now Colombia has been condemned as a drug haven. All these things suggest that Petro is, well, what is he? I mean, I'm trying to imagine the people of Colombia. These are strong allies of the United States. They're extremely well-educated. They've got a great business base. There's nothing handout about them. So what is it that they make of Petro? What is to be done with Petro?
Well, it's a great question, John. And indeed, here in my work in Lima, one of the groups of people that I've had the pleasure to interact with are representatives of Colombian Armed Forces, who have long been an exceptionally capable force, who have been close friends with the United States, going back to especially the late 1990s with our planned Colombia cooperation. But the big decision that was just taken by the U.S. government this week was to decertify Colombia with respect to drug cooperation. And essentially what that means is the U.S. saying the evidence in terms of the amount of eradication, the amount of cooperation on drugs indicates that we can no longer say that, that Colombia is fully collaborating with the U.S. to reduce the drug threat. And that's entirely consistent with the data. So drug production has exploded. Even the United Nations and their drug control office, UNODC, has indicated that you have literally just in 1 year, a 57% increase. What used to be 40,000 hectares of coca under cultivation is now on the range of 250,000 hectares under cultivation. On top of that, of course, you have President Petro himself with his total peace plan, building on top of what was a arguably very flawed a peace agreement with the FARC back in 2016 under the Juan Manuel Santos government. But the restrictions that the total peace negotiations of Petro have put on the Colombian armed forces in trying to confront the increasingly fragmented series of groups that used to be what's left of the FARC, what's left of an expanded ELN rebel group, various other groups, including what used to be called the Gulf Clan. And so that sense of a takeoff in not only drug production, but a takeoff in violence associated with these growing and fragmented criminal groups, it's of great concern to the United States. I think the concern with those who really value the U.S.-Colombia relationship was that decertification by turning off the spigot of U.S. Money and technical cooperation on everything from aircraft to anti-drug programs to institutional support programs would actually really hurt not only the relationship, but really institutionally hurt Colombia at a time when the Petro government is taking it in a very destructive direction. The good news that came out of this was that the way that the U.S. Government chose to do it is it says, okay, we can't ignore the evidence. We are decertifying you, but we will not impose all of the penalties of cutting off aid. So they got what they call a waiver for that decertification. And so that was a bit of a relief because what's approximately $500 million in aid just during the current year alone, that cooperation will continue. But politically, I think in Colombia, the message that says that Petro is not cooperating with respect to drugs and other things sufficiently, that has strong implications in Colombia by many people, especially on the right and center, who are deeply dissatisfied with Petro, with his total peace, with his posture on drugs, with the growing corruption. And as you pointed out, that's compounded by increasing concerns over Petro's personal family corruption and what seems to be mounting evidence, including by his own former foreign minister, that he is regularly incapacitated by drug and alcohol use and other problems.
There's good news. We're going to Argentina, and there's mixed news. We're going to Argentina. Professor Avanelis in Lima, Peru. This is the New World Report.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.